Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today as we wrap up Disability Pride Month in July, which marks the anniversary of the landmark Americans with Disabilities Act, there is more to be done to break down barriers that still exist for those with special needs. Also this morning, to your health, older adults are among the top consumers of healthcare services, but studies show they don't always get the kind of care they prefer and deserve. Now a new resource can help families make healthy decisions for healthy aging. And we have details on upcoming events in August at the Hancock Historical Museum. Sarah Foltz will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, July 31st, 2024. So the United States continues to lead the overall medal count at the Paris Olympics, picked up six more medals yesterday, including gold in the women's gymnastics team all-around final. That was the only gold that we picked up yesterday. So we have four gold medals now. Overall, though, 26 total medals. That is eight more than host nation France, who sits second in the medal count. China is third with 14 medals. And this I thought was kind of interesting, speaking in the medal count. With the six medals that we picked up yesterday, the United States is now the first country in history to surpass 3,000 medals all time at the Olympics. So that's pretty cool. We'll pat ourselves on the back for that. By the way, the other Olympic story, and I saw this on Yahoo Sports this morning, I thought was kind of interesting, kind of demonstrates how far we have come since the pandemic and the ensuing COVID scare a few years ago. Two U.S. swimmers and several from other countries have tested positive for COVID-19 in recent days at the Games, but not only have they not been sent home, they are not even required to withdraw from competition, even though they've tested positive. At these games, the COVID virus is being treated more in line with other respiratory viruses and respiratory issues. So, well, that is a big shift from the past couple of games. One Australian swimmer did withdraw because of the effects of COVID, and a British competitor pushed through but was well off his personal best time. But they are not only being sent home, they aren't even being forced to withdraw from competition when they test positive for COVID. So kind of interesting. A couple of items here. Ohio news. Big Lots. You might have heard about this. As a matter of fact, I think we were talking about it a few days ago. Big Lots, the Columbus-based discount retail chain, is closing nearly 150 of its stores now across the country. You remember the initial report was that Big Lots is in some financial peril, and they announced that they were going to close between 35 and 40 stores nationwide. But now the company says the number of stores that will be shuttering is up to 149. Company leaders blame inflation and the inability to compete with other retailers. And Big Lots really is kind of in a tough spot. I mean, they were one of the original closeout type discount stores, but they are perceived as not as high end as like a Gabe's or a TJ Maxx or a Ross store or something like that. Those are more, I guess, quote-unquote, high-end discount stores. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got the dollar stores, Dollar General, Dollar Tree, Family Dollar, and so on, that are just cheap, and Big Lots is not that cheap. So they're kind of wedged in a really difficult spot in that discount space. Now, here's the thing, and the reason I bring this up, no Ohio stores are closing as of now. The bulk of the closures will be happening in California, Arizona, and Florida. But stay tuned, as that can obviously change. But as of right now, no, none of the Ohio stores are on the chopping block. Another story that I saw on the Ohio Newswire this morning, the state Newswire, kind of interesting here, affecting Northwest Ohio. A half a dozen people are facing federal charges related to an identity fraud. Well, state charges for now, but probably federal charges on down the line. Charges related to an identity fraud and counterfeit cash scheme in several Northwest Ohio counties. Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost says six people are accused of producing and circulating counterfeit money and stealing people's identities in Auglaize, Defiance, Fulton, and Williams counties. Each suspect faces multiple felony charges. And we said since counterfeit cash is involved, federal charges are, I would imagine, forthcoming. I don't know. Kind of interesting there. A couple of other items among the first things you need to know. The most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started. And getting up this morning, make sure that you have breakfast. Don't skip the most important meal of the day. This is kind of interesting. A new survey of 2,000 adults finds 29% of us miss at least one meal every day. 29% of us skip at least one meal a day. The average American skips three meals a week. Only 22% say that they never skip a meal. And not only that, but we also tend to forget what we've eaten. Those in the survey could only remember, on average, 57% of everything that they ate in the past 3 days. So, no wonder we overeat. We just don't remember what or how much we have eaten. And I think that's because we snack so much. I mean, we have that mindless snacking, those empty calories that we take in without even thinking about it. And then, if you were to be asked later, what did you eat and how much? Oh, I don't know. Had a handful of this and a couple of cookies and, you know what I mean? Driti Batra of Lactalis Heritage Dairy says, with so many Americans skipping meals on a regular basis, it is important to make the most of what you do take in, what you do eat. And she suggests try incorporating protein-packed ingredients into snacks such as smoothies or salads. So don't skip meals. Don't skip meals. Not good for you. You know, there's been this I thought was really, really fascinating. There have been stories in the news. Southwest Airlines is doing away with their open seating policy here in the near future. They've decided to sell assigned seats at Southwest Airlines. First time in their 50-plus year history that they will be moving away from their open seating policy. And reaction has been mixed among flyers. Spirit Airlines has announced a restructuring of the way they sell their seats on their airplanes to be less like a super low discount airline and more like a traditional airline. The travel website, upgradepoints.com, asked American travelers which airplane seats were the most desirable. They asked more than 3,000 travelers to choose a seat from a typical seating map on a Boeing 737, which is the most popular short-haul airplane, narrow-body airplane out there, the 737. Seat 1A was the most popular. 1A. And generally, for many airlines, that is a first-class seat. It's a window seat, has plenty of legroom, and easy access to the lavatory. There's also the perk of being the first person off the plane once you get to your destination if you're at 1A. As far as coach seating, generally that starts at row 7, and so seats 7A and 7F in coach were the second most popular. 41% of travelers were willing to accept extra responsibility if it meant sitting in the emergency exit row because of the extended legroom there. So getting off the plane quickly, sitting up front, and that's always my thing. If I'm going to be on an airplane, I want to be near the front so I can get off the plane quickly when I get to the destination. Don't have to wait for everybody else. 2/3 of respondents preferred a window seat, which I thought was interesting. I prefer the aisle seat myself because as long as there's nobody walking up and down the aisle, I can kind of stretch out my legs in the aisle itself. You know what I mean? So I don't need the extra leg room because I can just shift my body and, you know, stretch out my legs in the aisle itself. I prefer the aisle seat. And, you know, the other reason I prefer the aisle seat, I had a window seat. This is one of the last time I flew, but one of the last couple of times I flew, I ended up with an aisle or with a window seat, and we were flying the way we were flying, the sun was beating down on my side of the airplane, and it was heating up the, I couldn't rest and lean against the side of the airplane because it was so dang hot because the sun was on that side. So got to be careful with those window seats. It was really, really warm there. So it's not always all it's cracked up to be, the window seats. So, but I think we all agree we don't want to be stuck in the middle, right? That's, don't want to be there. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, definitely one of those things that make you go, hmm. Researchers from Reichman University, this is in Israel, researchers claim that your face may have evolved to match your name. Your face may have evolved to match your name. I didn't even know that your face matching your name was a thing. But apparently, it says here, previous research has found that most of us can guess the name of a complete stranger with up to 40% accuracy, but this study claims the name somehow shapes the face. Researchers found that while children and adults could accurately link an adult's face with their name, the task was harder to perform when it came to kids, which suggests, they conclude, that your name is something like a self-fulfilling prophecy, and our face contorts to match our name. One of the most unique and individual physical components, our facial experience, can be shaped by a social factor, namely our name, according to the research paper. I'm not sure that I'm buying it, but that's what they say. Make of that what you will. There you go. Some of the most, you know what that tells me? The people at the Reichman University in Israel have nothing better to do. Really? You have nothing better to do than that? There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly cloudy today, a chance of a storm, a high around 90. Chance of a storm tonight, low in the mid-70s. Dates have been announced for Finley's Trick or Treat and the Cops and Kids Finley Halloween Parade. Trick or Treat will be held on Saturday, October 26th from 6 to 8 p.m., while the Cops and Kids Finley Halloween Parade is set for Tuesday, October 22nd at 7 p.m., The parade is organized by the Fort Finley FOP Lodge 20. Get more details and see video from last year's parade in this story on our website. An open house and ribbon cutting will be held for the new Little Panthers Learning Center in Macomb. It'll be held on Thursday from 1 to 7. Little Panthers Learning Center is located at 321 Park Drive South in Macomb. Village officials have said the new child care center will be a blessing for the people in the community who have been scrambling to find sitters. Officials have said some parents go to Finley and Bluffton for child care, and this new facility will make a big difference in many lives. Get more in the story on our website. Ohio's sales tax holiday is underway as parents and students stock up on back-to-school items. ONN's Clay Gordon reports on a few changes this year.
This includes the extension of tax-free days earlier this year. Governor Mike DeWine extended the sales tax holiday to 10 days, runs until 11:59 p.m. on August 8th.
ONN's Clay Gordon reporting. Urban archaeology will be the topic of the next Brown Bag Lecture Series from the Hancock Historical Museum Thursday at noon. The museum says for most people, the word archaeology conjures up images of lost civilizations from long ago and far away. But any archaeologist will tell you that archaeology can be anywhere, even in your own backyard. Archaeologists from the Manick and Smith Group have been conducting archaeological studies in and around Finley as part of the Blanchard River Flood Mitigation Program since 2009. Get more details on the lecture in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but we bring it up again because it is worth repeating that July is Disability Pride Month, this year marking the 34th anniversary of passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was transformative, really, in the way it improved the lives of all Americans with disabilities. That said, as the month draws to a close, we want to talk about where we go from here. Patrick Coakley is Senior Program Officer of Equity and Social Justice Partnerships at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And Patrick, we mentioned that the ADA was transformative. How so? Talk a little bit about the ways in which, over the past three decades, this has impacted the lives of individuals with disabilities.
Oh, of course, Chris. You know, the legislation has prohibited discrimination against individuals with disabilities in all areas of life. This includes employment, education, transportation, as well as access to public and private spaces. And in doing that, it's also resulted in increased workforce participation, higher incomes, greater financial independence, and better access for people with disabilities. But perhaps the most important thing that it's done is that it's changed our nature of understanding disabilities, our perception of disabilities in our community. It's created the idea and bolstered the idea that people with disabilities should be in our communities. We should see them at work, at school, at church, and they should be a normal part of that engagement, of community engagement, in the same way that disability is a normal part of life and a normal part of aging.
That being said, there is still much work to be done. For example, just in the area of employment, less than a quarter of those with disabilities are employed even today. And individuals with disabilities, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, are three times less likely to have a job. So for all of the good that has come from the ADA, clearly there's more to be done.
Oh, indeed. And, you know, in the realm of employment, that's something very important, because being able to work is actually something that I think many Americans define their identity by. And so what that means is that we also need to become knowledgeable as employers, as well as individuals, about the tools and accommodations that are available to make sure that people with disabilities can continue to work. And, you know, there's a misconception that accommodations are expensive or that you have to buy all these tools. But really, the data tells us that most accommodations are free. And if they do have a cost, they have a one-time cost of less than $400. So what that tells us is we have to get in this mindset of saying, oh, anyone who comes to work might need an accommodation or a tool that increases their productivity. And by providing these accommodations and tools, we're not giving away something extra. We're actually creating a workforce that will be able to stay with us and work to the best of their ability.
What about the role of, beyond just advocacy, continued policy in advancing the rights of those with disabilities? Is the ADA enough, or is that just the first building block and we have to do more with respect to legislation?
You know, the ADA is a wonderful starting point. In the disability space, we often say it's floor rather than the ceiling. But there's still a lot that remains to be done in order to make sure that people with disabilities are able to participate fully in our community. Unfortunately, people with disabilities face barriers still to technology, which is huge considering that most of our business is done now through either social media or the internet. Mm-hmm. They also tend to have difficulties getting access to quality healthcare. And in many cases, some people with disabilities even find it difficult to be believed by their doctors. There's also an opportunity for us to really think about how we are defining disability in a way that is worthwhile in our country. You know, most Americans will join the disability community at some point. One in four of us will have a significant disability before the end of our careers. So what that means is we need to think critically about how we think about disability, understand anyone can join this community at any time, and do our best to remove the stigma from it. Because when we do that, we will likely have more people being able to talk a little bit more openly about their disability identity. And then in turn, we can create better outcomes in our community.
You know, as we were talking about representation a moment ago, when it comes to the topics of policy and advocacy, that also is a bit of a catch-22, isn't it? Because certainly the best advocates are those with disabilities themselves, and yet they remain underrepresented in, for example, legislative roles that would be in a position to have the greatest impact vis-a-vis policy.
Indeed, indeed. But you know, what I think is interesting about that is that there are spaces of disability advocacy that we've become very comfortable with. If you think about the large number of advocates that are around, when we think about breast cancer and cancer survivors, those are also individuals with disabilities, and they've managed to be able to find a very significant voice. Whereas we've had congressmen before who have significant disabilities that they may not talk about, we're now seeing folks who are more visible. You know, you have Tammy Duckworth there on the floor, mm-hmm. constantly not only bringing, information and identity to people with disabilities, but, you know, showing that she is an advocate as well as a member of Congress. So we're getting there. But what's important is for us to really start thinking about disability identity as a natural part of our lives, as something that we can all come to, and removing that stigma.
I remember when the Americans with Disabilities Act was being debated prior to its passage, and one of the big pushbacks was the cost of compliance. And you were touching on this earlier, and I wonder, we talk about the things that still need to be done, the barriers that still exist, and I wonder, is the cost of that still kind of the sticking point, rightly or wrongly, still the sticking point holding back some of these next steps that need to be taken?
You know, I think cost is something that just sort of comes to bear, because that's sort of the initial place that we go when we think about, you know, how can we implement this? What's it going to mean? Mm-hmm. But one of the things I think is most exciting about where we are now is that when the ADA was passed, oftentimes we had to advocate for one thing at a time. We would talk about Black identity or disabled identity. But now this new generation that we have with these new advocates, they insist that we talk about these things all at once. So we're at a very unique time where we're now talking about the way that these identities intersect and are interconnected. And we have a new generation of people that want to talk about what it means to be Asian and to be neurodiverse, or to be Latino and to have a mental health disability. So we're in a sort of a new phase where we have to think about how these things not only interact with each other, but how we can create solutions that will work for folks from a myriad different communities.
So I mentioned July is Disability Pride Month, and a lot there to think about the ways we define disability, the way we include those with disabilities, and the work that still needs to be done moving forward. Again, Patrick Coakley is Senior Program Officer of Equity and Social Justice Partnerships at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Patrick, thanks very much for taking the time today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we know that healthcare costs generally increase as we age, but what are older adults getting for their money? Studies show that those age 65 and over often don't get the kind of care they prefer, which is why the John A. Hartford Foundation and Fair Health have together created a platform called FairHealthOlderAdults.org. And joining us this morning are Nicole Eney from Fair Health and Ronnie Snyder, Vice President at the John A. Hartford Foundation. Ronnie, let me start with you. What is the John A. Hartford Foundation, and what type of work do you fund?
Well, the John A. Hartford Foundation is a private philanthropy. We're based in New York City, although we operate nationally. And our mission is to improve the care of older adults. So we award about $25 million in grants annually to organizations that work in what we call our three program priority areas. They are creating age-friendly health systems, supporting family caregivers, and improving serious illness and end-of-life care. So ultimately, we're working really hard to ensure that all of us will have access to age-friendly care.
It's interesting that terminology you use. What is age-friendly care, and why is that important in this context?
You bet. Age-friendly care is healthcare that is based on the best evidence about what gets you the best healthcare outcomes as you get older. It's ultimately best care for everyone. It's just more important. It's really critical for older people who may have increasingly multiple or complex chronic conditions as any of us age. It reduces harm and it aligns all care with what matters to any of us and our family caregivers. And it's structured around what we call a 4 M's framework. So the first of those M's is what matters to the patient and their caregivers, ensuring that a healthcare provider asks on and acts on those goals and priorities, which for many of us will change as we age. Medications, making sure all medications are safe and appropriate. Mind, which is really reviewing any changes in memory or mood and getting screened for dementia is one example of that. And then mobility, which is identifying ways for older adults to stay active in whatever way is most appropriate as we get older.
Okay, so, and then Nicole, explain what Fair Health is all about.
Well, Fair Health is all about transparency. So we're a national independent nonprofit that's really dedicated to healthcare transparency. We maintain the country's largest commercial healthcare claims database, and we use that data to provide fair, objective information to everyone, including consumers. And so with the generous support of the John A. Hartford Foundation, we've launched this free online resource called FairHealthOlderAdults.org. And that offers a range of different tools and resources, some of which, many of which provide information on healthcare costs in addition to many other types of information, so that older patients and family caregivers can really navigate the healthcare system and make informed healthcare decisions.
What do you find are some of the obstacles that older adults and their family caregivers will face when navigating the healthcare system, Nicole?
Yeah, so it really boils down to, you know, that lack of transparency. So oftentimes it's difficulty finding cost information as well as other information that's related to care and coverage. You know, that lack of transparency in healthcare costs and healthcare generally, as well as the inability to really understand and effectively use in an actionable way the healthcare information that one is getting to make informed healthcare decisions. And so with all the different tools and resources that we offer on FairHealthOlderAdults.org, those can really help address some of the obstacles that people face when using the healthcare system.
So let's kind of bring it all together here. Ronnie, how does this platform then fit into that framework that we were talking about before with respect to age-friendly care?
So much of it comes back to that what matters. So what matters to so many of us besides getting best treatment possible is also understanding the options that we have and the costs of those options. That's what's really unique about these shared decision-making tools, is that shared decision-making in and of itself is not super novel, but this is the only place where you can also learn about the costs of those treatment options. So there are over 20 different Fair Health total treatment cost tools on the site. There are a variety of other things as well that are really useful, things like printable checklists that you can bring to your provider visits so that you know what you want to say and you don't lose track when it gets confusing sometimes when you're talking to a clinician. Other resources like patient disease organizations that can help with specific questions around navigating the healthcare system, educational content on a whole host of topics like Medicare, like dental coverage in retirement. And I just want to emphasize what Nicole already references with it, which is that all the tools and resources are free to you because our foundation has funded them and Fair Health is a nonprofit. We're not looking to ask folks to purchase anything. It really is about serving the public.
Well, Nicole, I was going to ask, and I'll ask you to expand on that. Ronnie was mentioning some of the resources. I was going to ask you about the tools and the resources that are on this platform that will help older adults and, again, their family caregivers uncover the information that they need to know when making those healthcare decisions.
Yeah, so just continuing on from what Ronnie said, she mentioned shared decision-making tools. So shared decision-making is when you have a conversation with your provider and decide on treatment and care based on your preferences, but also taking into account clinical evidence as well as the provider's expertise. So we offer a range of shared decision-making tools on a range of conditions, including early stage breast cancer, hip osteoarthritis, spinal stenosis, as well as slow and fast growing prostate cancers. And you can also find over 20 what we call total treatment cost scenarios. Those are costs that are typically bundled together for a certain period of time or for a certain event. So, for example, you could find total treatment costs for knee surgery or different chronic conditions, cataract surgery as well. Those printable checklists that Ronnie mentioned are really also a great tool that you could, access, print, take them with you to your doctor's appointment. Use all of these tools as well where you can with your providers to really have that conversation. You could access the website as many times as you need to. As Ronnie mentioned, this is all for free to consumers and fully accessible. So we just want people to really benefit from the information that we're offering on this website, fairhealtholderadults.org.
We will link it up on our webpage as well. Resources there to facilitate the issue that we mentioned earlier with the issue of older adults who don't always get the health care that they prefer. Here are some resources that will help facilitate that dialogue and reach those decisions. Nicole Eney from Fair Health and Ronnie Snyder, the John A. Hartford Foundation. Thank you both for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We have all seen those online videos of bears breaking into homes and cars and in search of food, getting into trash dumpsters and all of that. You see them online all the time. Well, a man in Tennessee had a close encounter with a bear in a parking lot who went looking for food and found himself in an SUV while the owner of the vehicle was sitting in the driver's seat. Most of the videos we see, they're getting into unoccupied vehicles and things like that. But in this case, the bear popped open the passenger side door and jumped in the SUV with the owner of the vehicle sitting in the car. The owner of the car was able to scare the bear off by honking the horn. Well, initially, the bear seemed to be unbothered by the honking horn. And that was when other witnesses who had seen this happen threw food into the parking lot next to the vehicle, and the bear decided to leave the vehicle alone to claim his snacks. He didn't have to break into the vehicle because the food there. Other folks coming to the guy's rescue. The bear still was hungry, though. Could be spotted later digging through a nearby trailer for more food. I'm not sure that that's going to end well for the bear. Generally, when the bears lose their fear of humans, they're rounded up and euthanized. But can you imagine the moment sitting in your vehicle in a car and the bear just opens up the passenger side and says, "I think I'll join you here, riding shotgun." Wow. That's pretty dramatic there. Speaking of online videos, here's an Olympic story making the broken news. A TikToker by the name of Sophia Elizabeth has been taking in the games in Paris and decided to set her sights on going for the gold herself by placing her Hinge location. The Hinge is a dating app. Placed her Hinge location smack dab in the middle of the Olympic Village. At first, she said, "I wasn't seeing any Olympians pop up." So I decided to get busy swiping. And sure enough, she claims to have matched with an American gold medalist. It doesn't say which one. She made a match on Hinge at the Olympics with an American gold medalist. The now viral video has over 14 million views. I want to know how it ended up. Did they hook up? Did they get together? Did they meet? Did they go out? They paint the town red, as it were? Inquiring minds want to know. I guess the athletes, this is what they're doing on their downtime. They're on Hinge. Elsewhere in the broken news, a Florida woman has been arrested at a local Walmart just because she wanted to drop in and pick up a case of her favorite soda, Diet Pepsi. She wanted to buy a case of Diet Pepsi, and that got her arrested. Here's the problem. Kathleen Hagen had apparently been banned from that particular Walmart location in Ocala, Florida. Not sure exactly why she was banned. Maybe she had been causing a ruckus. Maybe she had been caught shoplifting in the past. I don't know. But she apparently knew that she was banned from that particular Walmart, but she decided that that wasn't going to stop her. She claimed that she didn't think she would be caught, and that that particular Walmart has the specific pack of Diet Pepsi that she likes. I don't know what's special about it. I don't know what's special about the Diet Pepsi at that particular Walmart location. But the Marion County Sheriff's Office was called and placed her under arrest for trespassing. Wow. They don't mess around at Walmart. They kick you out. They kick you out for good. They don't mess around. They see your face. We don't want to see your face in here again. And if they do, you're in trouble. A couple of other items here on the broken news. A Maine man from the state of Maine. Not his. He's my Maine man. Man from the state of Maine has been arrested after robbing a bank from the comfort of his own car. Couldn't even be bothered to get out of his car and go into the lobby. No, Jason Arsenault, age 41, pulled up to the drive-through window wearing a black mask and used the bank's the pneumatic tube in the drive-through window to send a note to the teller that read, "Car bomb, no cops or alarms, or we all die. Give me $50,000 in 20s. The teller actually did send the money back through the tube, and then Mr. Arsenault sped away. What he didn't know was that police and FBI detectives used surveillance cameras to track the car and eventually got a picture of him without his mask. They caught up with him 6 days later, and when he confronted, he confessed to the crime and took them to the loot, which was hidden in some nearby woods. He now faces up to 20 years in prison and a fine of up to $250,000. Rob the bank through the drive-thru window. That's unique. That's a novel approach. If you're looking to grab the attention of a state trooper in Pennsylvania, here's how to do it. Try speeding on a motorcycle while failing to use turn signals and driving without a license plate. And don't forget to have your dog sitting on your lap while you're doing it all. With his dog sitting on his lap. 28-year-old from, let's see here. 28-year-old Devin Yake, Conestoga, Pennsylvania, was pulled over by troopers for speeding, failing to use his turn signals, driving without a license plate on his motorcycle, and he had a pit bull sitting in his lap. On top of that, just for extra measure, he had methamphetamine hidden in his sock, marijuana, and other paraphernalia on his person as well, and was determined to be under the influence. Mr. Yake was arrested and transported to the Lancaster County Prison. Luckily, the dog had no problem riding in the patrol car, and he was turned over to another more responsible family member. But riding with the dog on his lap. There you go. That is today's broken news report. I thought we had another item, but I guess that's it. There you go. Today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. And with that, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Thank you to everyone who helped 1330 WFIN stuff the bus this year. Also, thank you to our sponsors, our host site, McDonald's on Tiffin Avenue, all of our volunteers, and all of you who donated to help needy children in our area. For distribution dates and times, or to get kids registered, go to hcchfinley.org. Thank you again for helping 1330 WFIN stuff the bus.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is the heart of garage sale season. I mean, you think late spring through the summer and into early fall, a lot of people have garage sales. Maybe you yourself have held one or you have been garage sailing at some point during the summer. So the folks at the lawn care company, Lawn Love, have released this week a new analysis. They set out to rank the top cities in America to hunt for garage sale bargains. And they used a lot of different metrics on this. They looked at the number of homes with garages, which is important, and absent a garage, the number of homes with big lawns. If you don't have a garage sale, you have a lawn sale, your yard sale, right? So they looked at the number of houses with yards, big yards, and or garages. They looked at the weather, because nobody wants to go garage sailing when it's cold or it's rainy. And they looked at interest, Google searches for garage sales. And they crunched all of the numbers, and the number one city in America for garage sales is Los Angeles, California. That's number one overall. Although, if you really want to do some serious garage sailing, head to the Lone Star State. Texas has three of the top five and four of the top 10 spots. Number two, San Antonio. Number three, Dallas. Houston is number five. Fort Worth is number six. Wedged in there is Chicago at number four. The rest of the top 10, Minneapolis, Indianapolis, Wichita, Kansas, and Portland, Oregon. But Ohio fares pretty well. Two on this list. Cleveland is 13th overall, just outside the top 10. Columbus is the second best Ohio city on the list for best garage sales, number 24. Cincinnati places 32nd. Toledo placed 33rd. And Dayton, 42nd. So all of the big Ohio cities, they're in the top 50. Not too shabby. The worst place, and by the way, there are 500 cities on the list, and the worst place that they ranked for garage sales, Deerfield Beach, Florida, at number 500. And yes, by the way, I would have thought that Beverly Hills would be at the bottom of the list. Can't imagine there are too many garage sales going on in Beverly Hills, but they were not on the list there separately. Themselves. So they didn't even make the list. Top 500 Beverly Hills. Thought that was kind of interesting. But Los Angeles, California is number one. And by the way, I also happen to see this, and this is on a completely different subject. At first, you think this is a completely different subject, but I think there's a correlation here. A recent study by Forbes gives California drivers the lowest score as the most aggressive drivers you will encounter on roadways in the U.S. Forbes gives California drivers, I guess, the top of the list as most aggressive. They looked at frequency of different types of aggressive driving behavior, like tailgating, cutting people off, blocking other drivers from merging, etc., 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 and they decided that California is the most aggressive drivers. And I saw that, and I thought, well, they're just trying to get through the garage sales, apparently. Because LA is number one on the list. So that's what it is. They're just trying to get to those garage sales. Sarah Foltz is here from the Hancock Historical Museum with details on upcoming events in the month of August. We were just talking that it's hard to believe that tomorrow we start the month of August already, but here we are.
Here we are.
You've got a really terrific brown bag lunch lecture tomorrow to kick off the month. I love this topic on urban archaeology.
I am also so excited for this, and it's so easy to think of what you think of places far, far away when you think of archaeology,
right.
And I'm excited to have someone come in who is also familiar with the Findlay area, mm-hmm. Dr. Robert Chidester, and he's been involved in Findlay, believe it or not, and his team because of our Blanchard River flood mitigation project.
Okay.
So since 2009, mm-hmm. They have been studying areas here in Findlay.
Okay.
So it's just
so
cool
like
to,
things that are brought up when we're doing all of this mitigation work and things that have been uncovered and that kind of thing? Or
I imagine so. And this is the awesome part is to be able to really think about what could really be in your backyard and mm-hmm. think about the people that have been on this land before any of us were.
Exactly.
And tomorrow he's going to focus a little bit more about the working class here in the first half of the 20th century.
I would imagine, you know, when you think about it, I hadn't really given it a whole lot of thought, but, you know, while we're doing all of this stuff around the river and mm-hmm. tearing down those properties to clear that green space. And so on. That's where a lot of the early settlers kind of gravitated to because it was so important to be near the river. So I'd imagine there's a lot of urban archaeology to be done in some
exactly.
of those properties. Yeah,
exactly.
We're probably not digging up any dinosaur bones here necessarily, but you never know.
That would be kind of cool, right?
Yeah. That would be kind of cool. And yeah, we don't think of that in this area, but right. yeah, you can do archaeological digs pretty much anywhere. So
right.
really cool stuff. That is tomorrow at noon, right?
Exactly. Tomorrow at noon, you can bring a lunch if you would like. It is free for museum members and just regular admission for non-members. And it's just a quick hour. Mm-hmm. Enlighten your lunch hour.
Yeah. Really neat. Then later on in the month, you've got another classic movie night, and this one is the big one, the fun one, because you take it out outside.
This is the big fun one. It's the Bill and Gail Miller Outdoor Classic Movie Night. So bring your lawn chairs. This is free to attend. We have our 90s exhibit currently in the museum. So if you haven't okay. checked it out, make sure to visit it.
Mm-hmm.
And we played off of that theme, so okay. we're featuring Jurassic Park on August 17th.
All right. Well, speaking of archaeology, yeah,
right.
it kind of ties into the whole thing there. That's one of those that I'm still having trouble thinking about that as a classic. But again, you know, playing off of the 90s exhibit, we're talking 30 plus years ago now.
Exactly.
So,
and
yeah.
it's that sense of nostalgia, just
yeah.
relishing it. We're mm-hmm. enjoying it. We're loving it with the 90s exhibit. We're looking forward to some more fun events all around 90s theme because for a lot of us, that's just...
that is history.
Yeah,
yeah.
exactly.
And that's a great one to see on the big screen outdoors too. So again, just come on out with the family. It's absolutely free.
Yep. Bring a lawn chair. You can bring your own beverage as well. It's a great family-friendly event. We'll have some extra things. It kicks off at 7, but once sundown comes around, we'll start the movie. But mm-hmm. Ian's Donuts will be there. We'll have some Jurassic Park themed cars to look at, some kids activities. So there's
okay.
it's a whole evening.
Yeah. That is Saturday, August 17th for that event. Those are really the two big things that are on the schedule for the month of August. However, things are really starting to pick up in terms of planning for and preparing for things that are coming up beyond that. For example, you've got the historic barn tour that won't happen until September, but the tickets go on sale tomorrow for that.
You're exactly right. We are ramping up for another two of our biggest events. These two events between Historic Barn Tour and Oktoberfest take place in September. So we're looking forward to the fall time. And these are really so important because they are the primary fundraisers for our nonprofit. Being privately funded, we rely solely on our community to keep our doors open and to help us continue to share our local history.
Mm-hmm.
So the barn tour is an awesome one. This is a self-guided tour. You're going to get to see six barns in the southern part of Hancock County in the tickets go on sale tomorrow. 16 and under is completely free, so you don't need tickets for that. But 17 and up, just $10. Save a little bit of money by getting your pre-sale tickets, and you'll get to go on this self-guided tour.
Is that the big deal with getting tickets in advance? Because there's really not a limit per se, right?
There's really not.
Okay.
We do the more the merrier, obviously. We want to really kind of have a grasp on how many people there will be. We do 6 barns, and you can start at any one. So we just want to make sure we can help spread everyone out.
Yeah.
We have families that are prepping their properties and their barns, so you can learn a little bit about the history, about the families, and then we put a bunch of activities at each spot too.
Again, here is, and we've talked about this in the past with respect to the historic barn tour, here is another example of history that we see every day that we drive past, or we kind of look, we can overlook, is easily overlooked, but there's a lot of these buildings tell some incredible stories.
When you think about it, these are some of the very first structures to exist.
Mm-hmm.
When you go into each barn, you will learn about, you're looking up at the beams, and it's, some of these were the very first trees to ever grow on the land here in Hancock County. And you can tell that because they were all hand cut. You can tell by the size.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is a celebration and a highlight of this preservation of these structures.
Impressive structures, too, because a lot of these were built, you know, obviously before we had many of the construction tools that we have and all the heavy equipment that we have now. So
you're right. They all kind of highlight the pre-saws, before we were using saws.
And they were bigger than the houses.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you'll see some combinations too. So that's kind of how it walks you through history and see, oh, that's when we started using saws, and that's when things started getting, you know, maybe easier, maybe not as sturdy, but these structures are really impressive. You're not going to want to miss this.
Yeah. So that is actually Saturday, September 7th. But again, the pre-sale tickets go on sale tomorrow. And those will be at a discount if you get them early, right?
Yep, $10. And you can get them online at hancockhistoricalmuseum.org, or you can stop into the museum while we're open.
Now, you mentioned Oktoberfest is also coming up in September, and at the risk of getting too far ahead of ourselves, because we'll talk much more about that when we get closer, but you are looking for volunteers.
Yes, we are currently recruiting volunteers. It is a huge team effort. We're looking at 7,000-plus people coming into downtown Findlay, and it's just a huge celebration of our German heritage, right?
Yeah.
There's something for everyone, all ages, and we cannot do it without the help of our community. So I would love for us to be able to put our best foot forward. And if you have a team of people, you're looking for something to do, there's short shifts. So visit our website.
That's an important point. The day, it's a full day of events and activities, but you break it down into shifts. So nobody's really working through the end. Well, you may be, but
I will be, our team will be. But yes, we break them down into 3 hour or less shifts so that you can still enjoy the event.
Yeah. And like you said, they come from all over. So this is an opportunity to really put our best foot forward. And if folks want to volunteer, how do they do that?
Visit OktoberfestFindlay.com. You'll learn a little bit more about the event. And then there's a sign up right there. You can scroll through, see exactly what you might want to do. Maybe you want to work admissions. Maybe you want to sell drink tickets. Maybe you want to experience pouring beer if you've always wanted to be a bartender and you haven't had the chance. So there's something for everybody.
Okay. Again, the upcoming events tomorrow is the Brown Bag Lunch Lecture on Urban Archaeology. That at noon, right?
Correct.
And then the outdoor classic movie is coming up on
Saturday, August 17th.
Okay. We've got a link on our webpage for more information from the Hancock Historical Museum. Sarah Foltz with us this morning. Thanks very much for the update. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And that will finish up the podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests, of course, for joining us on the program. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Once again, that is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow, it is 2 weeks until many students head back to school. They've got the new pencils and the notebooks and all of the latest fashions, but do your kids have all the vaccines and boosters that they need? It is time to get to the family doctor to find out. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.